You love your children. But do they know that? How would they know that? Love is a feeling deep in your heart, something you feel when the children walk by and there you are at home and just see how cute they are, or something you feel when you peek on them at nighttime and they're sleeping quietly in their beds. You feel that love in your heart. But what happens during the daytime? What is it to be loved? Have you had that very warm, safe feeling with a person where you just feel so loved by them? Many of us have not had that kind of feeling, but we know what it would feel like. If somebody loved us, they would be so accepting. They wouldn't be judgmental. They would take care of us and help us when we needed that help. We'd feel so looked after, so supported. They would be sympathetic to us, understanding. And they would be appreciative of everything we did. We would feel absolutely celebrated, so seen, so acknowledged, so welcomed. If we can have a relationship like this in our lifetimes, we feel so privileged and so fortunate to be in the warm embrace of a loving, accepting person. And of course, most of us had the experience of being in a feeling, a situation where we felt rejected, where it was the opposite of love, where we were in the presence of a person who picked on us or who criticized us, who put us down, who seemed somehow to have no regard for our feelings or our human sensitivity. We felt judged negatively. We felt disliked, unwanted, misunderstood. In those situations, the opposite of love, we felt emotionally unsafe. And we've always tried to avoid being with people who make us feel that way. We try to get away from those people as much as possible. How do you think you make your kids feel? It's one thing for you to love them, and a different thing for you to be able to communicate that love to them. How would you make your child feel understood and accepted and embraced and celebrated? And how might you make your child feel unsafe, judged, uncomfortable, rejected? The things we say and do every day in parenting actually go in one direction or the other. They go in the love-building department or in the rejection-building department. If we wanted to make our children feel rejected or unloved or unsafe, there's many ways that we could do it. And these are some of the common and favorite, almost, parenting communications. For example, a display of anger makes people feel unsafe, unliked, unloved. So anytime we show a child our displeased face, or use an irritated tone of voice, or use harsh words, that is, we use the communication tools of anger, anytime we do that, we're causing a child to have that unloved feeling. Does this mean that we can never show a child our displeasure? No, it does not. It simply means that we need to be aware that when we're doing that, we're also giving the child this unloved feeling. And the question is going to be, how often can we give a child this unloved feeling and still have the child leave our home feeling absolutely securely loved?
If we think of it this way, one mildly bad feeling communication causes 20 of our good feeling communications to be thrown out the window, so to speak, to be erased, then we can say that every time we say something that makes the child feel badly, 20 of our good efforts are erased, and we have to replace those good efforts. That, in other words, for the child to feel loved, we have to have 20 times the number of bad feeling communications. And we're talking here about mildly bad feeling communications, a mild show of displeasure. Now, you might wonder, does a mild show of displeasure really feel badly? If a parent frowns at a child, does it really hurt the child? Does it really upset the child? Is it really so terrible? And the answer has to do with the intensity of that frown. Is it like a snarl, a sneer, a look of utter disgust? Or is it just kind of like, you know, I'm not so pleased? So the intensity will matter, and the frequency will matter. So if this snarl or frown or whatever it is happens all day long, it will have a different psychological impact on the child than if it happens once a week or once a month or once a year. The frequency determines the negative impact of negative attention, as well as the intensity, because sometimes you can be with somebody for just, they'll make a comment, let's say a small comment in the course of 5 hours that you're spending with them. And of the 5 hours, 4 hours and 59 seconds of it was great, but this one little comment can undo all of the time that you spent that was great. It can just ruin the whole 5 hours. And that could be because the comment was a particularly hurtful remark, a very severe dig or assault on your character or something really hurtful. So it's not only frequency that matters, but also intensity. So these two factors, how intensely negative is the negative attention you're giving, and how often does it occur, these two factors must be kept in mind if we want our children to feel the love that we hold in our heart. Because it's only inside our heart unless we take the trouble to communicate it properly. Now let's look at we said anger was one example of something that would be something that undoes the feeling of love, because anger makes a person feel unsafe and uncared for and unliked and unwelcomed and so on. But what else can do that? Another favorite parenting technique does that all the time, and that's called criticism. Criticism hurts. Now, I'm not saying we don't need criticism. We just want to keep in mind that when a parent gives a child criticism, the child will feel hurt to some extent. Just like when your spouse gives you criticism, and maybe, you know, well-deserved criticism, but it still hurts. Or maybe your boss at work gives you criticism. It hurts. It may be true, but it hurts. And if somebody gave you lots and lots and lots of criticism, and perhaps you deserve lots and lots and lots of criticism, and they give it to you all day long, you're going to start wanting to avoid that person. Because even though what they're saying is true, and even if what they're saying is meant to help you in some way, criticism itself is hurtful, and too much of it becomes toxic. So again, we have this question of frequency. How often can a parent afford to give criticism and still have the child feel loved? That's going to be the question. And similarly, how intense can that criticism be and still have the child feel loved? Because there's mild criticism when a parent says to a child, "Oh, honey, please don't rock in the chair that way. It's not good for the chair." Okay. Or there's intense criticism, you know, which involves some sort of perhaps character slur or personal attack or some nasty name that it's called, you know. I don't even want to give you an example. Use your imagination, right? That the child, you know, the parent actually gives very harsh correction. And there will be a difference. Mild criticism hurts a little bit and undoes 20 of our loving remarks. But intense criticism hurts a lot and can undo hundreds or thousands or millions of our positive efforts. So again, if criticism is too frequent, it happens all the time, or it's too harsh, then it's going to be much more damaging to the sense of the child's feeling loved. Now, related to criticism, we have something called complaints or corrections. Longer versions of those are called lectures. And so let's just say that all of this, criticism, complaints, corrections, and lectures, they're all bad feeling to receive. They're unpleasant, and therefore they all must be limited in their frequency, and they must be mild in their intensity. Other things that children experience from their parents as part of just growing up are threats of punishment and punishment itself. Can a parent raise a child with absolutely none of that? Not usually, although once in a while there's a perfect by birth child who seems to need absolutely no discipline. But let's say that, you know, 99% of children will need to be threatened at times. You know, that's if you don't stop hitting your brother, you'll have to leave the room. You know, can't just stand by and watch you beat him up. We have to threaten you in some way. And then, you know, maybe we need to punish you as well as part of your education. And that's not going to feel good. It's going to feel unpleasant to the child and make the child feel rejected and hurt and wounded, even though it's meant for the child's well-being. Okay? It's not that we're trying to hurt the child, we're trying to help him, but the actual feeling result is that it hurts the child emotionally to be threatened or to be punished. So how often can we threaten a child and still have the child feel loved? How often can we punish him and have him feel loved? And again, the answer is going to be not too often, because threatening and punishing are actually fairly intense negative forms of attention by definition. In other words, they start off with a high intensity level. And while there are more, we'll call it dire threats and more horrible punishments, you know, and there are less threatening things and less threatening punishments, the whole category of threatening and punishing is intensely unpleasant to receive. You don't want to receive that from anybody, and neither do your kids. So we can't do it very often, because instead of those things knocking out, just say, 20 of your positive, loving communications, I would say that threats and punishments, by definition, knock out at least a good 100, okay? That's if it's a mild threat and punishment. They knock out 100 of your loving communications. And if the punishment is a horrible punishment, one that the child, you know, is just going to suffer terribly from, then again, it could knock out thousands or millions of your positive communications. In other words, a kid can remember a punishment lifelong. And although that may serve a certain good purpose, and that maybe he'll never do that behavior again, more often it has nothing to do with helping the child not do the behavior. The child simply remembers the horrible punishment he received and the negative feelings that went along with it. In addition, in the bad feeling category of things that we can do to kids that make them feel unsafe or unloved, there's something called neglect. Or a milder form of that might be lack of interest. That's when a child is jumping up and down, look, mommy, look what I did. And mommy either doesn't bother to look up and she says, oh, very nice, you know, or doesn't say anything at all. Just is not enthused, is not present, is not there, is maybe turned off or distracted. And there will be plenty of times when we parents are like that, because we're tired, we're overwhelmed, we're busy with something else right then. We're human. We've got a lot of really good reasons why this could happen. We just need to know that when it happens, it is one of those bad feeling communications to the child. And so how often could this happen and still have the child feel loved and secure and all those good things? So if a child was ignored all the time, constantly, and some people, you may have heard them complain that their father was never home. And when he was home, he was always distracted, always with his nose in the newspaper or watching the TV, never had any time or attention to give to his child. So the child ends up feeling unloved and uncared for and having no relationship with dad because dad is absent. So how often could we be absent in that way, neglectful or uninterested, and still have the child feel our love? And, you know, again, it's going to be a matter of not too often, right? If that was your regular way of, you know, just not being involved, not being connected, not being there, then the child would feel unloved. And there are some parents, because of their own circumstances, their own illnesses, their own crises, and their own traumas, who really cannot be there for their children. Sometimes parents are depressed, and they're spending all day locked up in their bedroom, you know, crying under their covers, or sleeping away their life, because of their own mental illness. And the child will feel that sense of neglect and abandonment. Or sometimes the parent is physically ill, and just, you know, there's nothing can be done about it, but the parent is not there to help the child, to be involved with the child. And although there was no bad intentions whatsoever, the child can still feel neglected. And, you know, unless the parent has some other way of giving the child attention, verbally, to be present somehow, the child could end up feeling a lack of connection, a lack of love. So again, it's not too often would be the ratio for how much we could get away with just not showing proper attention to the child. And in this category of bad feeling or unpleasant feeling communications, we have one final category, and this one happens all the time in parenting, for all of us parents. This is the category of giving instructions, or we could call it making demands or having requests. Demands, requests, instructions, this is telling a child what to do. Time to go to bed now. Time to get off the computer now. Time to get up now. Time for dinner. It doesn't really matter what we're saying here in the what to do category. It's just unpleasant being told what to do. And if you live with a spouse and all of the communication consisted of what to do's, you know, here's some instructions for you, please pick this up, please go here, please do that, please do this, honey, even if you say it nicely with a please in front and a honey at the end, the instructions are slightly aversive. None of us human beings like to be told what to do. So when we tell a child what to do, we just have to keep in mind that this is part of the not pleasant communications. Now again, I can hear you screaming there in the background to me, what do you mean we have to tell the kid what to do? How is anything going to happen? And you're correct, we will be having to tell a child what to do. The question is again in the ratio. How often can we tell a child what to do and have the child end up feeling loved? It's going to be a ratio of that 1 to 20 factor, which means 80% of our communications need to feel actually positive and good to the child, and 20% could be in this less pleasant category, and some of that can be instructions or what to do's, demands and requests. Remember, we're going to want to leave in that 20% room for the occasional lack of interest that we're naturally going to show, the occasional criticism that we're going to have to offer, the occasional threat or punishment that we will have to give. Okay, all of that we have to leave some room for it in our 20%, because it's part of parenting. The big thing is that it can't be a large part of parenting. It must be a very small part of parenting. So we'll say for a child under 12 years old, we'll allow that to be even up to 20%, because there's so many what-to-dos that we have to put in that category for children. We do have to instruct them a lot. And therefore, the child under 12, we're going to allow for a 20% ratio of all of those bad feeling communications. As a child gets older, they have actually less tolerance for being told what to do. And we lower that category to 10%. The entire category, including our anger, our lack of interest, our threats and our punishments, the whole category, including requests and demands, instructions, all that becomes a maximum of 10%. So that 90% of our communications feel good to the child, and 10% can be in this less pleasant category for children who are over the age of 12. That's our teenagers, our young adults. When a person is an adult, in fact, if you're living with somebody, a spouse, right, the ratio of the negative to the positive is even lower. Instead of having 10% allotment of the bad feeling categories, we allow for 5%, so that a good marriage would be 95% positive communications, and only 5% of this category of anger, neglect, complaints, etc., and you would have an ideal marriage. Just check yourself. What is your current ratio with your spouse? What is your current ratio with your teenager? What is your ratio with your young child? Now, remember that intensity also matters, so that there are things in the bad feeling category that we never want to happen in parenting. Insults, name-calling, sarcasm, put-down, all forms of verbal abuse, you know, they're so intense that you don't ever want to be using those things. So hopefully you've got your mouth quite tightly under control. Now let's look at what's going to be in our 90% for the teenagers, our 80% for the children, our 95% for our spouses. What are those communications that build that warmth, safety, love, respect, all of those wonderful feelings that make a person feel truly loved, make them know that they are loved? So we have in this category actual words of love, saying to our child, "I love you. You're the greatest. You're the most fantastic. You're stupendous." You know, words that we call those big praises, the kind of praise that only a mother could give. You know, it doesn't mean that you're the most fantastic person in the universe. It translates to, "I love you. To me, you are the most fantastic. To me, you are the most gorgeous." You know, those big praises. But smaller praises that are more realistic, like, "You did a great job with your handwriting there," or "I like the way you cleaned up those toys," or "You put away all your clothes in your drawer so neatly." Those acknowledgments and praises, those also count in the feel-good department. They build love because, as we said earlier, somebody feels loved when they feel seen, acknowledged, appreciated. So these words of acknowledgement and gratitude, "Thank you, honey, for helping me unpack the groceries," or "Thank you for taking out the garbage," all of that helps a child to feel seen and to be received well. Little cutesy names that we call our children, you know, they're endearments. They make them feel loved. Words of empathy and understanding, words of sympathy, support. "Oh, you've had a hard day. Oh, that sounds terrible. Come tell me all about it." That kind of thing. And then when the child tells you all about it, instead of criticizing him and correcting him, you simply listen supportively, name his feelings back to him, you know, acknowledge the difficulty of the situation. But then being there to help also, when help is wanted, is a way of showing love. Joking with a child, laughing with a child, playing with a child, what we call quality time. These are all ways of showing love. Greetings, the opposite of neglect, right? "Hi, honey, how are you?" when the child comes in the door. "Bye, sweetheart, have a lovely day," you know, and that kind of thing. Those are all loving communications. There's a category that I call news, weather, and sports, which is the category of just talking about things to a child that are more adult to adult, like what you did today, what shopping escapades you had, what happened at work for you, which team won the sports event, what's happening in the news, even what the weather will be tomorrow. All of these communications are pleasant small talk or interesting exchange of ideas that build a relationship. They feel warm, they feel comfortable. Physical touch, of course, a pat, a kiss, a hug, when it is wanted, is part of showing love, giving treats, giving favorite foods, preparing foods, gifts, small and large, all show love. So our communications need to consist 80% of these loving communications for children who are 12 years old and under, 90% for the teenagers, and 95% for your spouse. Of that last category, words of love, cutesy names, words of appreciation, acknowledgement, empathy, sympathy, helping, joking, laughing, playing, greetings, news, weather, and sports, treats, and gifts. And I'm sure you can think of more yourself, of the kinds of behaviors that feel loving to receive. And you're going to limit the ones that feel unloving. And in this way, your children will know that they are loved.